And the Angels Were Silent by Max Lucado. Chapter 11, You're Invited. Come to the wedding feast. Matthew 22:4. I am writing this as I sit in a large room in the county courthouse of San Antonio, Texas. I am here by invitation, a summons to jury duty. It wasn't too personal. It wasn't very fancy. Just a simple card with my name and directions to the courthouse. But it was an invitation for me and about 100 other folks to visit the judge. This certainly isn't the most meaningful invitation in my life, but still it's an invitation. It makes me think of some others in which I've played a part. Some years back, I offered a person a very special invitation. I asked Denilyn to marry me. Being that marriage proposals are not something you give every day, I tried to make the event memorable. I began by ordering Chinese food from our favorite Chinese restaurant. I ordered our favorite meal, sweet and sour pork. I put in a special request for an extra fortune cookies. While the food is being delivered to my apartment, I took a small strip of paper and printed my proposal. When the food arrived, I put the paper in the cookie, set the table, put on my best clothes, and waited for Denilyn. The night was wrapped in romance, soft music, candlelight. When she saw the cloth napkins, she knew I had something special in mind, but she wasn't sure what. I ate little. The butterflies in my stomach left little room for food. I couldn't wait to get to the dessert, for in the dessert awaited the invitation. When the moment came for the cookies, she said she wasn't hungry. I had to beg her to take a cookie. I told her if she didn't eat it, at least read the fortune. She did. She opened the cookie and read the words I'd written on the piece of paper. She began to cry. I was devastated. I thought I had offended her. I thought I had insulted her. I don't know how I expected her to react, but I never expected her to cry. That shows you how little I knew about women. I now understand that crying is the utility infielder of the emotion. It covers all bases: sorrow, happiness, excitement. Happily, hers were tears of excitement, and she said yes. She has since, however, been reluctant to open any more fortune cookies. Invitations are special. Some are casual, such as asking for a date. Some are significant, such as offering someone a job. Others are permanent, such as proposing marriage, but all are special. Invitations, words embossed on a letter. You are invited to a gala celebrating the grand opening of. Requests received in the mail. Mr. and Mrs. John Smith request your presence at the wedding of their daughter. Surprises over the phone. Hey, Joe, I've got an extra ticket to the game. Interested? To receive an invitation is to be honored, to be held in high esteem. For that reason, all invitations deserve a kind and thoughtful response. But the most incredible invitations are not found in envelopes or fortune cookies. They are found in the Bible. You can't read about God without finding him issuing invitations. He invited Eve to marry Adam, the animals to enter the ark, David to be king, Israel to leave bondage, Nehemiah to rebuild Jerusalem. God is an inviting God. He invited Mary to birth his son, the disciples to fish for men, the adulterous woman to start over, and Thomas to touch his wounds. God is the king who prepares the palace, sets the table, and invites his subjects to come in. In fact, it seems his favorite word is come. Come, let us talk about these things. Though your sins are like scarlet, they can be white as snow. All you are thirsty, come and drink. Come to me, all you who are tired and have heavy loads, and I will give you rest. Come to the wedding feast. Come follow me, and I will make you fish for people. Let anyone who is thirsty come to me and drink. God is a God who invites. God is a God who calls. God is a God who opens the door and waves his hand, pointing pilgrims to a full table. His invitation is not just for a meal, however. It is for life, an invitation to come into his kingdom and take up residence in a tearless, graveless, painless world. Who can come? Whoever wishes. The invitation is at once universal and personal. In the last week of his life, Jesus offered two stories about urgent invitations. The first is about two sons whose father invites them to work in the vineyard. Their invitations are identical, their responses opposite. One says no, then changes his mind and goes. The other says yes, then changes his mind and stays. The second story is about a king who prepares a wedding feast for his son. He invites the people to come, but they don't. Some ignore the invitation. Some give excuses about being too busy. Others actually kill the servants bearing the invitation. Have you ever wondered how Jesus felt as he told these stories? If you've ever had a personal invitation ignored, you know how he felt. Most people don't reject Jesus. They just don't give his invitation serious thought. Imagine my feelings had Denilyn responded to me the way many people respond to God. What if she had been vague and noncommittal? Imagine me on the edge of my seat watching her read the proposal in the amber of the candlelight. What if, instead of tears, she had given me idle talk? Oh, marriage has been in our family for years. What? Marriage has been in family for years. My uncle got married. My aunt got married. My mom and dad. I even have a sister. Wait. What does this have to do with us? I'm talking about you and me. Well, Max, like I say, I'm all in favor of marriage. I think it's a wonderful idea, a terrific institution. But I'm not asking for your opinion on an institution. I'm asking for your hand in marriage. It must sadden the father when we give him vague responses to his specific invitation to come to him. How kind of you to invite me, Jesus. You know, my family has always been religious. In fact, we trace our roots back to the Huguenot Revolution. You probably remember my great-great-uncle Horace. He was a priest and real popular with the Indians. What? Like I say, our family has been pro-religion for years. My Aunt Macy sang in the choir at First Baptist, and my cousin Arnold is a deacon at... It was to such ramblings that God spoke these words in Jeremiah 7:13. I spoke to you again and again, but you did not listen to me. I called you, but you did not answer. What if Denilyn had said, Max, you are very kind to think of me, but could we talk about this tomorrow? There is a movie coming on TV in a few minutes which I really want to see. Or even worse. Marriage? Well, you know, Max, we ought to discuss that someday. Let me see, I've got an opening next. No, that's not a good day. How about 2 weeks from Tuesday? You give me a call and we'll set up a time. Oh, that would hurt. You see, it's one thing to be rejected. It's another not to be taken seriously. Nothing stabs deeper than to give a once-in-a-million, for-your-eyes-only invitation and have it relegated to a list of decisions to be made next week. Jesus gives the invitation. Here I am. I stand at the door and knock. To know God is to receive his invitation, not just to hear it, not just to study it, not just to acknowledge it, but to receive it. It is possible to learn much about God's invitation and never respond to it personally. Yet his invitation is clear and non-negotiable. He gives all, and we give him all, simple and absolute. He is clear in what he asks and clear in what he offers. The choice is up to us. Isn't it incredible that God leaves the choice to us? Think about it. There are many things in life we can't choose. We can't, for example, choose the weather. We can't control the economy. We can't choose whether or not we are born with a big nose or blue eyes or a lot of hair. We can't even choose how many people respond to us. But we can choose where to spend eternity. The big choice God leaves to us. The critical decision is ours. What are you doing with God's invitation? What are you doing with his personal request that you live with him forever? That is the only decision which really matters. Whether or not you take the job transfer is not critical. Whether or not you buy a new car is not crucial. What college you choose or what profession you select is important, but compared to where you spend eternity, that is the decision you will remember. What are you doing with this invitation? As I said earlier, I write as I wait in a large room of our county courthouse. I am here by invitation. As I look around me, I see 100 or so strangers who also receive the same jury summons. They read magazines. They flip through newspapers. They stand and stretch. They do office work. And I ponder the irony of finishing a chapter on God's invitation in a room where I wait for the judge to call my name. Every few minutes, the muffled conversations are silenced by an official-looking gentleman who will enter the room and call names. Yvonne Campbell, Johnny Solis, Thomas Adams. Those he calls will be given instructions, and the rest of us return to our activities. I'm apprehensive about the interview. I don't know what the judge will do. I don't know what the judge will ask. I don't know what the judge will require. I don't know what the outcome will be. I don't even know who the judge is, so I'm a bit anxious. However, this isn't my first invitation to appear before a judge. I have another summons. It is appointed for men to die once, and after that comes judgment. But I don't feel the same anxiety about that appointment, for I know what the judge will do. I know what the outcome will be. And most of all, I know who the judge is. He's my father.